What is this? What is this? Oh man! I did it again! Will somebody please press start?
Welcome to Grace Junkies. Please forgive the long delay in postings. Yes, this is the April call. Today's topic is Christian isolationism, the good, the bad, and the beautiful. Joining today's call from My Life Ministries forums are La-Di-Da, Gracie, Larry, myself, Tim, and special guest appearances by Faith and Stavine. If you would like to comment about this or any other episode of Grace Junkies, or you'd like to listen to past episodes, please visit our website at www.gracejunkies.com. And now your host, Brad McFadden.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Grace Junkies. We're online with La-Di-Da. Say hello.
Hello.
There you go. And Gracie.
Hello.
Hello. And Mr. Larry.
Hi, guys.
And producing the show tonight, we have Tim. Me.
Hiding in the background.
There you go. And lurking is also Faith, but hello. There she is. All right. So Tim and Faith may, since we're a little short tonight, one person short tonight, so they may kick in if they have something to say. Otherwise, we're going to get this party started. Is everybody ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Go for it.
The topic tonight is isolationism, basically Christian isolationism, and how the different aspects of it. I don't want to be too narrow because I think we're gonna hit it from all sides. We've done a couple of shows on the Two Blind Squirrels, me and Faith, talking about isolationism and how we tend to, when we get depressed or when we get attacked or when we feel vulnerable, or there's a host of different reasons, but we tend to retreat to ourselves and back out of fellowships and stop going to church, or at least doing less and less of the extras and going out of our way to seek out fellowship. We tend to want to curl up in a corner and feel vulnerable. And the enemy tends to use that. But so I thought we'd start off maybe with giving some examples or some instances where this has happened to us, or maybe even when we recognized it and stepped out and how it's helped to end that isolationism. Anybody want to step up and go first?
I have a quote that I think would be a good starting point for us.
All right.
It is from Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Life Together.
Ooh.
And, yes. And it says, let him who cannot be alone beware of community. Let him who is not in community beware of being alone. Each by itself has profound pitfalls and perils. One who wants fellowship without solitude plunges into the void of words and feelings, and one who seeks solitude without fellowship perishes in the abyss of vanity, self-infatuation, and despair. And I like that because it was kind of a balance between the two of them, saying you can't just go into this, you know, empty words, I'm going to go and hear sermons and do nothing about it, or just go for the spiritual high of church. And it also says you can't just retreat into your own little thing and you know, shun the church and all the community that God's put us into, because we do need to balance both of them. So I thought that would be a good starting point for our isolationism talk.
It's true. It's true. And he was coming from a very unique perspective. I don't know if everybody knows. Probably everybody on the call, but maybe not everybody listening knows who he was. But I mean, he really fought isolationism in a more structured way in Germany, right?
Right.
When Christians really had to, if they were going to act like Christians, they pretty much had to go underground to do it. I think that in my own life, I have tend to, when I get hurt or feel bad, I'm a very outgoing person. I mean, everybody can recognize that. And I pretty much exist on social activity. But when I'm hurt, I tend to want to just curl up and feel sorry for myself. And that's not good for me. And faith's very good about recognizing. I think this is where, you know, even where it's incumbent on us as Christians to keep each other accountable. And, you know, faith's very good about spurring me to, let's go out, let's do something, you know, let's get together with, you know, this other couple or whatever, and get out and do something because, you know, you're in a funk, you know. And I think that we need to call on each other to do that. I mean, even as friends, we don't need to let our friends retreat. And we need to encourage them to, when they're in that situation, to go ahead and continue to seek fellowship, because it's in that fellowship that the Lord can do so much, because He works. I mean, He can speak to us, and He can definitely use His word, and He can definitely speak to us, but it's in that fellowship that He really wraps His arms around us and loves us, I think, a lot of times, at least for me.
Yeah, I know for me, I tend to isolate myself more, kind of almost like a shame thing. I take things really, really personally, really easily. And I've always just had the feeling that when something's wrong, it's somehow my fault. And even if it's really not very much attached to me, I still will always find something that I can take responsibility for. And so even if I've been hurt by somebody, somehow I think I've caused it in one way. So it's more of a retreat of shame and just kind of a hiding. And I do that. I've gotten a lot better. But I would even say even now, even when it comes to church, I'm very much to myself, and I'm not the same person that I used to be years ago. And because, you know, I'm so afraid of coming out of that and saying that it's a safe place to go. I feel like it's, if I'm kind of keeping to myself and just kind of, I don't want to say withdrawn, because I'm a lot like you, Brad. I'm very outgoing, and that's really my personality. But I like to have the safety bubble around me that will keep me from getting hurt or allowing me to hurt other people. And it's a real false sense of responsibility, because I may have nothing to do with the situation, but I still will feel that kind of that scapegoat mentality. And so I retreat more for that purpose. And I just feel like it's a safer place for me. And I don't think it's right. I mean, I still have to deal with it. Continually. It's very hard for me to see a situation that that there's an argument or whatever, and I'm not somehow to blame for it in some way. But instead of me just being able to pick up and move on, I'll just like kind of hang my head low. And it's not a pity party for me. It's more of a, you know, I'm really sorry, you know, I'm a rotten person, and let me go hide now. So that's my reasons for isolating myself, is the enemy just really has a field day with that weakness that I have.
Good, good. Larry?
Well, that since I'm a very private person, it's very easy for me to separate what I feel deep down from what I share publicly. And so there will be many instances where I'm wrestling with something. And when I'm by myself in my room, or even when I'm just praying, you know, I'm wrestling with this problem. But then do I share it with my Bible study? Well, maybe, maybe not. Do I have people pray for me? Well, sometimes. And that's I think, what danger is for me, is splitting what I'm really concerned with privately with what I express publicly. Because I'm able to actually have two different two different Larrys, if you will, the public Larry and the private Larry. And what's interesting is I don't think that anyone who doesn't know me well can tell that I'm keeping this aspect of things I'm troubled by private.
Hmm. So you have to make a conscious effort to let people in, even when you're in public.
Absolutely. And it's not even just in public. Even when I'm with the small group Bible study that meets in my house every week, and we pray together, we're actually very close to each other. Even in that situation, I have to work hard to open myself up to sharing with other people.
Good, good. I wanted to say that that sometimes when we're, and maybe not so relates so much to what you're saying, Larry, but I think it relates more to me and Gracie, is sometimes when we're retreating like that, we feel like we're doing it out of some type of self-preservation, or, and she said shame. But there's also, for at least for me, there's a lot of guilt there as well. But the point is that I think that we tend to drive people away as well. We don't do it consciously, and it's like, you know, people will say, "Hey, yeah, you really snapped at me," or you really reacted harshly to what I was saying, and I didn't mean to. I wasn't mad at them, but I tend to. It's part of that isolationism is to keep people, you know, keep people at a distance and push people away in a way that is that to them feels aggressive, whereas, you know, it feels more like a retreat.
Right. That's interesting that you say that, because a couple of years ago we were having some kind of a women's gathering at my old church back in Jersey, and we were kind of playing this game where one person would get up and everybody would just, you know, kind of share how they felt about them. And I remember that this one lady had come up, and I knew her for years, and she said, I enjoy talking to you. I think you're really funny. And we talked about singing and stuff. And she says, but you come across to me as though you don't want to be my friend. And I never gave the impression, I thought, to her that I didn't want to be her friend at all. I mean, there was nothing, no reason I wouldn't want that. But there was an obvious wall that I put up to people that said, you know, you can't go past this with me. And it wasn't that I intentionally put it up, but here's a safety net that I raised to protect myself. And in the meantime, it's coming across to everybody else like I'm, you know, distant, and I'm not somebody that they could really talk to or they could reach out to, because I created that wall. So I can understand what you're saying about that.
Yeah. Well, La-di-da, what do you have to contribute?
Well, I am also kind of a private person, and if I'm going to retreat and run away, I'll do something social, kind of the opposite of these people who are running away to themselves. And if I'm going to ignore things or have my little sorry for myself party, then I'm going to go and be with other people and try to forget about everything, I guess. Whereas if I'm here in my apartment by myself, then I am forced to deal with those things. And I do a lot of journaling and things like that that will help me to deal with it. And I'm always inviting God into those times with me. Of course, there are times when I'm not doing what I'm supposed to, and I'll just watch some depressing, freaky movie or something and, you know, do foolish things that really don't help anything. But for the most part, if I'm here by myself, then I'm trying to work through things. And it is that retreat for me. It's a great place for me to refresh. I spend all day working with people, little people, and, you know, it's really nice for me to be able to come home and unload that and process it and work through it so that I can learn from what I did all day and from what I didn't do all day and from whatever God has to say to me. I'm not going to hear it if I'm out having fun with my friends. I'm going to hear it if I'm here by myself and writing or reading.
Yeah. I was going to bring this up a little later, but I think this is a good time to do it. It's a perfect transition. Let's talk a little bit about the opposite of isolationism. And I don't mean going out in public. I mean, what La-di-da is getting at here is a time set aside to be alone, and not in a, but not in a way that is harmful to us, but a time that is reserved for us to be isolated from the world in a time that we can spend time with the Lord and seeking and meditating and this kind of thing. I'll start off by saying it's been very hard for me, because I am such a social person that it's extremely hard for me to get alone and really take the kind of time that I need to. And in fact, I've had to actually schedule that time, you know, like plan a day and rent a cabin and go there, you know, with the intent purpose of of being by myself. And our Sunday school teacher does the same thing. He goes camping. He goes, he takes a tent and he just goes out and will spend the night out by himself, away from cell phones and televisions and stuff. And I mean, even the men's retreat, which we had at our church, didn't help me because I was with all these other guys playing 42 and joking and laughing and not really spending time alone. So do you guys have this problem as well, or is it easier for y'all?
No, I'm like you. I'm like that too. It's hard for me to do that, and I feel almost awkward sometimes. I mean, it's hard to explain. I mean, like, you know, if I like to be by myself, but it's not for a long period of time, and I find that my time with the Lord is like, if I could pray in the car or I don't know. Sometimes when I'm traveling, as I'm kind of moving around, if I'm doing something else, I have to almost be doing something else to feel like I could have that time with God. And we're supposed to be...
You travel, Gracie. Does that help or does it hurt?
It helps. It's both. I mean, it helps in the sense that I get more time given to me where I can be in a hotel room and I really have more of an opportunity to, you know, spend the time in the Word and whatever. But I don't. Like, I'll pray, but I can't just sit and pray. I'm the kind of person, I almost have to pray out loud to be heard. And like, I know God can hear me, but I need to either be pacing or doing something else as I'm praying. I can't just sit and do it. It's the weirdest thing. And I don't know if it's like a spiritual ADD thing. I don't know. But it's just, So I will tell you, though, when I'm on the planes, that is really a time where I can sit and I can pray in my seat, and that happens to me a lot, too. It's kind of funny because, you know, you're in the plane and you're like, Lord, let this not be our last conversation. and I've had that, especially when I first started flying a lot, I had that prayer a lot. But, you know, I do find myself praying on the plane. But in the hotel rooms, I don't even have the TV on. I'll get on the computer and stuff. But I can't. I have the opportunity, but I don't always take it. And it's not that I don't want to be with the Lord. I do. I mean, I love the Lord. I guess it's an awkward place for me to be sometimes. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Just a minute. I won't go to Larry, but when I'm at home by myself, I've got the TV on in one room, the radio on in another room. All the lights in the house are on, and I'll be reading a book and playing on the computer all at the same time. I mean, it's just my natural state of being, and so even when I'm traveling, you know, I'll turn the TV on just for noise in the background, and when I'm at work and I'm working in code, I've got to have music going on in my ears, or I can't even focus on what I'm doing.
Wow.
I'm weird like that too, but in a little different way. Now, Larry, you're a more private person. So, how does this isolation? Are you more like Lottie Dow, where it's just a natural state of your being to kind of be alone, or explain?
I would say so, but I cannot focus on more than one. But so if I'm coding, for example, I have to be quiet. If I'm praying, I can't have the TV on in the house. So back a couple of years ago, when I was really focusing on my walk with the Lord, I would get up early in the morning and I would read the Bible and I would pray. And because I did that regularly, it was easy. And because I did it first thing, it got done. And because I did it at O'Dark 100, there was nobody else in the house to bother me. And so that's actually, when I have time to do that, that's very easy for me. And I can go alone for days and not talk to anybody. And it for a long time, that didn't wear on me at all. It was not a problem. And lately, I've become more social, I think.
Good. Lottie Dow, you wanted to say something.
Yeah. I was just thinking about all the noise and having all that stuff on it. You know, I need to focus. And you know, I can't focus all that stuff, but I was thinking about my students and how there's like 20 minutes a day that they're expected to be quiet and working, and they can't deal with it because they're in this generation, or I guess it's a culture, I guess it's not just a generation, that they hate silence. They hate it. They freak out. Anytime it actually gets silent, somebody will say, awkward silence. I was like, it wasn't awkward until you said it. And, you know, and they're used to having their iPod on while they're watching TV, while they're talking to people on IM, and while they're, you know, pretending to listen to their mother tell them what to do. And they're not, it's true, or perhaps their teacher. And so they're not, you know, they're not used to that sort of still and quiet. And, of course, a lot of them also don't know the Lord, so it would be a scary thing. I would be afraid of whatever is going on in my head if I didn't know God, since I'm afraid of it anyway. So, you know, I mean, and God doesn't, in my opinion, God doesn't really want to yell over all that other stuff. And so for me, you know, I'm not going to be able to hear much of what's going on. I can't even hear my own thoughts if there's all this extra background stuff. And I actually had a pastor talk to me about that once, or talk to the church about that once, about having, you know, even if you've got Christian music playing in the background, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're doing that while you're reading the Bible, you know, it's not necessarily getting through to you as well as it would if you were somehow able. I know that a lot of people right now are not able to focus on one thing all at the same time, but, you know, if you can train yourself to do that, then perhaps it will sink deeper in, and it won't just be, I understood all the words in the sentence, but that they're actually, you know, becoming a part of you.
I think that you've hit upon a huge thing. I don't know if we can cover in this call, but there's difference between knowledge or storing knowledge in your brain and actually committing it to or absorbing it in a way that facilitates wisdom. And I think that is something that is rare in this culture anyway. I didn't want to step on Tim. Tim, you're up. What's up?
Thread hijack, Brad. Thread hijack.
I know.
Save that
know.
For another call.
All right.
That's my specialty.
Even though I'm going to touch on it anyway. I have a holy jealousy for people who can stop and turn everything off and go in their literal or figurative prayer closet and have a time with God where they're not watching their watch or wishing they could have their headphones on or listening to see if anyone else is in the house. Maybe it's just because I'm so ADD, but I go into a quiet place and I'll sit, and 10 minutes later I'm bouncing off the walls. I'm just like, Lord, I love you and I want to hear you, but oh my gosh, I feel like Johnny Five. I need input. You know? Okay, I'm this person that she described as a teenager. I'm at work, working with my headphones on, and you know. Usually an IM open in the corner, and this, you know, this, that's going on. If I don't have five things happening at the same time, I feel like I'm missing something. And I had the farm to myself for a while before Karen and Alicia moved up there, and I had the opportunity to go up there for a couple days, and I drove myself nuts. I left the MP3 player at home. We don't have cable, satellite, TV, nothing up there. You know, it's like, and in 3 days, I was so ready to come back to find people and noise and stuff going on. I couldn't deal with it. But it is so important that I keep coming back to it. I keep trying over and over and over, and I will never give up, because I honestly believe that this is a hugely important piece of what we're supposed to be doing. Brett touched on it a little bit in that he said we don't. The Bible tells us to study and meditate on the Word. It doesn't just say read it. It says meditate on it. Make it part of who you are. Know it so that you can say it later. And I am literally filled with a holy jealousy for people who can do this on a regular basis, because for me, every time I try to do it, it's a huge struggle.
But
and
you know
I,
what, Tim? I think that, and I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt you. I was going to say that... it's actually very encouraging to me to hear you and Brad say that you have the same struggle that I do, because I think that that's actually more of the common problem than we realize, because I know exactly what you're saying. I have a holy jealousy, too. My husband is very, very good with knowing the word, and he can sit in one room for hours, and he can just study it and study it and study it. And, you know, you think all the stuff that I put on the board that are scripturally related, a lot of times I'm asking him for help because I don't know the word the way that I want to know it. And it's not because I don't love the Lord. It's not because I don't want to know it. It's just that there is, like you said, there's this, like, craziness that I'm just very uncomfortable if there's a time of where it's like just me and him. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because I'm afraid he's going to tell me something I don't want to hear. I don't know what it is. It's just difficult for me. But I was wondering if it maybe has something, if there's a connection with that and how each of us have a different way that we learn something. And by that, I mean, you know, sitting down and reading the Word, for example. I can't sit there and read chapters and chapters and chapters and be able to tell you that I've really got a whole lot out of it. But it's not just the Bible that I'm like that with. The program that I train on my job, it's the same thing. I'm a visual learner. I have to see it. I've got to touch it. I've got to actually see it in action for me to grasp it. And then when I grasp it, it's just like I soak it in like a sponge. And it's like that with the Word. If I go to church and I talk about it and I see a visual, our pastor's real good about visuals, I will understand it and I'll remember it all week long. But if I sit there and I read it myself, I won't. And what it's done is it's actually discouraged me from sitting down every single morning and reading it and praying. I mean, I will pray, and I will pray in the car. A lot of my worship with God is through song, because that's the only way that I really feel the most comfortable in serving him. And but I was just thinking, it seems to be that it's more of a common problem that Christians have of getting into God's presence, you know, without, you know, being able to ignore all the distractions of life. And I think it's more of a problem than we realize.
I don't want to give Brad too much credit, but this is the point you touched on, Gracie, and that is, what's the difference between having the Word be a part of you and knowledge? And that's where I get my hang up. And, you know, Karen's always harping on me. She goes, oh, you're really great at quoting chapter and verse, and I can give you a vague reference, and you can tell me probably, you know, within a chapter or two where it is in the Bible. But, you know, I mean, for me, that's more head knowledge than heart knowledge. I don't absorb the Word to the point where, as I walk my walk day in, day out, the Word is in my heart, living in me. It's, you know, when we want to talk about theology, suddenly, hey, there I am. You know, I can talk at this level way up here, but it doesn't necessarily. A pastor once said this. He says, beware that you miss heaven by 18 inches. And that's the difference between storing it in your head and storing it in your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's very good. I was thinking about what you were saying, Gracie, about listening to God. It's very, very hard for me to hear God. And when I'm praying, I want to be two-way communication. I want to lift up my request to God, but then I want to hear what he has to say to me. And unless I actually set a period of time where I'm listening, then I can't hear him. And sometimes it takes a long time. And sometimes I just don't. But
do you always trust that what if you do hear from God, that's God and that's not you? I mean, how do
you
know? I believe that God speaks to me. Believe me, yesterday he spoke to me loud and clear because he kind of smacked me upside the head. But there are times, that's maybe what I'm afraid of, is that even though I hear God at times, and I've even, you know, had prophecy that I actually gave because I know it was God, there are so many times I'm so afraid that I'm going to be wrong. I don't believe that God would be wrong at all. I believe that I'm so stupid that I'm not going to get it right. And I think that a lot of my reluctance in pursuing it even further is because I don't trust my own self. And I know we're not supposed to trust in ourselves, but unfortunately, that's just a hang-up I have, where I trust in my own ability, you know?
Hey, Gracie, that's where we have this. That's why we don't want to go into isolationism, bringing this back around to the main topic. And that is because the same spirit that talks to you, Gracie, talks to me, talks to Larry, talks to La-Di-Da, talks to Brad, talks to my pastor, talks to people, you know, all over the world. And sometimes when we are not clear on what we're hearing, we can go out and tell people, this is what I'm praying about, pray about the same thing and tell me if you get anything from God. And if it comes back to you and back to you and back to you, you know that's God talking because it's the same spirit in all of us.
I agree. And it talks about the Lord's voice being a still, small voice. And I don't know what y'all's experience is. Sometimes he does yell at us. Sometimes he does hit us when he needs to. But I find that when me and Faith go on vacation, she makes me sit on the beach and do nothing. And it's that first day that's the hardest part because I want to go see what that is over there. I really want to go over there and see what that is, or I want to go down there and see what they're doing. And me and Chaz were having this conversation this morning on the way to work, and he was saying, I could never go on vacation with you. I want stuff to do. And I'm like, but you got to fight through the boredom to get to peace. And on the other side of that boredom is peace. And to realize that you've got nothing better to do, there is nothing better to do than to sit there and pray and listen is astounding, but it's hard to get to there. And for people like me and people like Tim and maybe even Gracie, it's hard to get through that I'm missing something or I'm bored or my legs, if I am sitting there, my legs tapping 90 miles an hour and I can't focus on anything. But there's a peace that comes after that, at least for me, after that boredom and that really, it's in that place that I can really tell, really distinguish the still small voice. And him bringing back the word to me in ways that are so meaningful that I don't hear on a normal day-to-day basis, that I only hear the slaps and the yells. And usually those are not good. Those are, watch it, there's a car, and it's those still small, it's those times where he's really able to teach into what I've been reading or what he's been trying to tell me. So, la-di-da, what you got to add?
Well, I was just thinking about this situation that I have. I'm planning on moving, and I talked about it on the forum. I asked about discernment, and that's what you just mentioned and what Gracie mentioned. And actually, Gracie was the one that kind of brought this piece to me God brought it, but through Gracie, about God speaking to us in a way that we're going to understand because he knows me and he knows how I'm going to understand him. And that doesn't mean I don't have to do anything, that I can just, run around all day and do whatever I feel like, and I'll definitely hear it. But if I'm focused on him, then, it's certainly going to be something that happens. And, what I thought about was that I have not been isolating myself in this, and this is one of the times when I'm actually out and actively seeking the advice of others because I know that the same spirit is dwelling in those that know him. And that's what's been really encouraging, is to see the confirmation from all these other people that are also following God and seeing, yes, this is what you should be doing, and we're really excited for this move for you, and this is, this sounds like a great plan for you. And not just the people who I work with that are like, yeah, you're young, go out and do what you want. It's these people that are following God that are like, you should be going. God's clearing a path, and you need to get out there and do it now. And, that's been the most encouraging thing. And, and even though I'm prone to being on my own and doing all these things on my own and seeing things as just me and God, because a lot of the time it is just me and God, being out and actually being in that community, heeding Bonhoeffer's warning to be, to make sure that I am in community, that it's just been, the most encouraging thing and makes me think maybe I should be out and be a little more social than I am.
Well, bringing this point back, like Tim tried to do a while ago, back into non-isolationism, and we've been sort of been focused most on getting alone. Kind of these calls, you never know where these calls are going to go. But I wanted to bring up a couple more points about isolationism, and one of the things we've done with Helen, my daughter here recently, is to encourage her and get her to make a commitment to us that she will, during the day, make compliments to other people. I mean, she says thank you. We've taught her manners, but it's time to make that next step. And she's always getting compliments, but she always just says thank you and that's it. And we've tried to say, well, you need to give a compliment back. But we've got to the point now where we're, you know, we're getting her to make a commitment to give that compliment, to try to teach her that blessing of fellowship, that blessing of blessing someone else, of giving a compliment, and then how that makes you feel. And that's the point. It's like, you know, I ask her, you know, what did you say today? Because she's supposed to say one thing to somebody each day. And so I said, well, you know, how did that make you feel when you said that? And she's, you know, she's starting to make that connection. Well, I felt good because I was thinking about, first day, I felt good because I was thinking about what you were going to say when I told you I did it, you know. and then the next day it was, well, I felt good because she smiled when I said it, you know. And so it's wonderful to see those connections of fellowship and to be able to recognize them and then to say, hey, you know what, I need to be doing that. You know, I need to be making sure that I'm giving other people compliments, especially when I'm in a funk. You know, in the forum the other day, Jen, one of them posted what do you do when you're sad? And it's one of the best things in the world to do when you're sad is to compliment others, is to cheer somebody else up. You know, find somebody that's sadder than you and cheer them up. And I think that's that kind of fellowship that the Lord works through and wants. You know, He says we'll be known by His love. And if there's one thing He preaches over and over again, it's that love, you know, and love each other. All right, I have nobody up next. Who wants to talk? Gracie, you haven't said anything in a while. You're dying. Come on.
No, I don't really have anything to add to that. I'm just thinking more about just kind of how I react to situations and why I isolate and, you know, just trying to, like, I know why I do it, and I know I'm never the kind of person that will ever blame God and be angry with Him. I can't see myself ever doing that. I don't have that kind of thought process. But when I think about the times that I've really isolated myself and I've done it more of a safety thing and also and a guilt, it was, you know, guilt and shame for me, just that process for me was just to kind of hide and to run away. And I have a history of when the going gets tough, I get running. And I will have, if I have something that happens, I will run away from the situation. And, I mean, literally, physically run away from it. And it's tough because, you know, God wants us to be stronger than that. He wants us to rest in the fact that He is our shield and He is our supporter and He's with us. And, you know, 5 years ago when I went through the hell that I did, that was a very, very, very bad year for me. And I did a lot of isolating of myself. I really tried to retreat to myself and to stay with it. And I did stay close to God and I did hear Him. And I felt like He was the only friend that I really had. But He also didn't want me just to stay in that little rut that I was in and not be friends with anybody and you know, just to hide in my little house and go to work and come home. He wanted me to be stronger than that. And I did have people that were trying to encourage me at church and kind of try to pull me out of my shell. And there was a big difference when I went back to the church that I had left after I had, you know, made the mistakes that I did. People said I was a completely different person. I had gone from being this outgoing and, you know, happy person to this quiet, don't talk to me, like, kind of a person. And I did that probably because of the guilt and the shame and all that. But God didn't want me to remain there. And, you know, even 5 years later, He still has to kind of pull me and just trying to drag me on. Like, if there's something, if I think that I have offended somebody or if I think there is hurt involved, I will run from the situation. And, you know, I may, like, it's kind of like a child that'll run into God's arms. It's like Helen might run into your arms and just be like, Daddy, protect me. And the thing is, you want her to kind of be like, it's okay, Daddy's here, but it's okay to go forward and you'll be okay. And I'm still in that learning process as a child to allow God to push me out and say it's going to be okay and you're not going to be hurt. And even if I am hurt, He's there with me. And, you know, if He's for me, who can be against me? And even though I'm not the kind of person that goes into pity party, and maybe it is a pity party, I don't know, I don't tend to see it that way, but, you know, God doesn't want me to remain in this self-absorbed depression that I'm just to myself. He wants me to have that fellowship. And that is, that's really the key, is as he's ministering and he's working in my own insecurities and my own hurts, by me not in going in reaching out for that fellowship, I'm not helping the situation at all. And I try not to go out and reach out for the fellowship because I'm trying to protect myself, but it's not helping, because that's what God has the whole body of Christ for, is to love one another and to be there and to encourage and to uplift each other. And without that, you know, we can't go forward. If you think of Moses, you know, when Moses was having all those, you know, people coming to him and everybody was just, you know, complaining. And I remember in the scripture where it talks about how all these people held up his hands, that he had to keep his hands lifted. And as long as he kept his hands lifted, you know, the battle was won. And it's kind of like, you know, he had to have other people help him in that. He had to have other people support him. And that is something that isolationism does to me, is it keeps me from that. And that is a dangerous place to be, because if I don't have that fellowship, I'm not going to come out of it, and God doesn't want me to remain there.
Good point. Larry, accountability. Another,
go ahead.
Another aspect of non-isolationism or fellowship, or avoiding isolationism, especially when you're in a place where you're vulnerable or when you've been hurt, is accountability. We're told not to sin in our anger. And I know that, well, can you speak to that? Can you talk to that?
Well, one of the things that I was thinking about when Gracie was talking is that you want to be in fellowship while things are going well for you, so that it's there for you when you need it. And so we were talking about that in my – the Bible study I have is actually, we call it a home church, because we get together regularly every week to study the Word, to fellowship, and to pray. And it's really the body of Christ shrunk down to a dozen people so that we could be really intimate with each other before the Lord. And what we were saying is that we've gone through individually huge, difficult periods, but, you know, one or two at a time. And so the rest of us were always there to lift them up or to give them advice. And you know, sometimes... indeed, it really is more as much accountability as it is support. I was thinking about the time when, I was talking about tithing, and one of the members of the group says, "No, that's not the right way to think about tithing. You really need to think about it this other way." I thought, oh, yeah, you're right. And so by bringing my problems up before the group, I could actually get sage advice from other Christians about how I should be thinking about those problems. And so it's not just accountability in what we do. It's accountability in how we think about what we're doing, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Exactly. La-di-da, you want to chime in on another aspect of this, right? Right along the same lines?
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, in being alone and in isolating yourself, you're cutting yourself off from a lot of the blessings that God has for us, especially in terms of confession, in that accountability. There's always that, you know what, I messed up today. And in The Celebration of Discipline by Richard Foster, there's this quote that says, "A man who confesses his sins in the presence of a brother knows that he is no longer alone with himself. He experiences the presence of God in the reality of the other person." And, you know,
wow.
I really believe that. And, you know, I've been in those situations where I have isolated myself and I decided, you know what, I can't tell anybody about this sin, or I can't tell anybody about what happened or whatever it was. You know, I felt like for whatever reason I couldn't talk to anybody. And then when I finally did, it was just, not only was there this burden lifted off of me and I felt like, you know, there was light shed where all kinds of darkness had been hanging out, but it brings me so much closer to that person, and we're able to experience God in each other in a way that we were never able to do before.
Yes.
That's an excellent point, because one of the tools that Satan wants to have at us is that we are going to stay in bondage. And it is absolutely true, I know for me, and she hit it right on the head, that you know, when you confess that sin to somebody else, there is a release that you have. There's a freedom that comes with that, and it's just like this weight comes off of you, and you feel so much better. And Satan doesn't want that to happen. So the way that he will try to keep that from happening is when you isolate yourself, keep yourself from fellowship, and then you're not going to share it with anybody. And which is interesting that this is even coming up, because in September, I was asked to speak at a women's retreat that's very much along these lines about, like, you know, dealing with marriage and dealing with hidden sin in a heart of a woman. And that is the key thing, is that when you hide yourself and you just kind of keep it to yourself and you don't fellowship and you just say, I'm going to stay in my own little world, then you are staying in that bondage that Satan wants to keep you in. And there's no freedom there. And all it's going to do is bring you misery and depression. And it's not going to be what God has called you to walk in. And that's really why it's, you know, when I've reached those places of, you know, I don't want to go, I don't want to talk to people in church and whatever, that God really works on me and says, no, you know, go out there and you need to be with your friends. You need to fellowship, you know, because that's the place that he can bring that relief. And Larry said a great point and said that, you know, the accountability of somebody else being able to help you think of something in a different way. You know, there's many times that I will see something in one way and one way only, and then, you know, somebody can say, well, you know, I actually see it this way. And I go, wow, you know, that's true. And Satan, again, likes to put the wool over our eyes and make us see things in a perspective that it's not really supposed to be. So there is a lot of reason why isolationism is actually very dangerous to a Christian. It keeps us from walking in that freedom that Christ died to give us.
Yeah, it's a lot harder to follow Jesus with Satan on your back.
Exactly.
All right, well, listen, we've got a surprise guest. Stavine was originally planned on joining this call, but he was off counseling someone who is prone to isolation. So he was doing that, and he's joined us at the end. Stavine, can you share a little bit of, you know, what you've been up to?
Sure. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. There's a woman at the church I attend that 2 years ago came out of a cult experience, and every once in a while she and I will have a chat after church about how something that was discussed in the larger gathering may have impacted her. And tonight was one of those nights. We started to talk, and we've been discussing how we might be able to create a ministry that would reach out to people who are not as comfortable in the normal Sunday morning service, maybe a little bit misfit kind of thing. I have a little bit of that background from my years of youth ministry, and then she has some of that from both her time in a cult and she's an adult child of alcoholics. So that was the conversation I just came from.
I think for all of us who know people, and I really don't know Gracie or Larry or Tim or even Lady Da's experience with those kinds of things, but I know I've had several, and we have people that that we're in our family and that we're close to that struggle with these things. And man, isolationism is the enemy loves to use addiction. I mean, loves to use isolationism to in your addictions. I mean, it's whether it's internet pornography or drugs or gambling. I mean, it seems like it's when these people get alone, and especially for a couple of days, that's when they fall. I mean, it's almost every time that's when no matter how long they've been clean, no matter how long they've been good, they get, you know, everybody goes away and leaves them for a couple of days, and all of a sudden they come back and they're in jail or something. You know, isolationism and addiction, man, what a deadly combination.
Yeah, and in her case, I think it's been remarkable that she has continued to attend. She was sharing with me tonight that most of the time when she comes on Sunday, and she and I are in the same Bible study Sunday morning, most of the time when she comes, she doesn't get anything out of the event. I think many times the primary reason she does come is because she's going with her husband. And her husband was part of the same cult experience that she was. So one of the things that she said that I thought was very interesting was that if there were a 12-step group that she knew of that were meeting Sunday morning at the same time as our church service, she'd be there instead of in church. And you said something on one of the podcasts recently, I think it was you, talking about the Cheers bar and the theme song. I think it was the podcast on theme songs, how it's so nice that theme song talks about everybody wants a place where everybody knows your name.
Yeah.
And I've often thought, there was one point in my career that I lived a block and a half from the Bull and Finch Pub in Boston. And so it's really kind of neat to hear references to that song. It's hard to get into a situation in a church sometimes, particularly if you have some prevalence towards isolating yourself. It's hard to get into a situation where everybody knows your name. And so we were just talking a little bit about how we might be able to set something up in the church that spoke to people in that situation. Be interested to know if there was a discussion of along that line that I missed in the conversation.
You'll have to go back and listen, huh? Yeah, we've gone around that. I wanted to kind of wrap things up by saying that throughout the New Testament, I think that Jesus made it very clear. Throughout the whole Bible, it's not good for man to be alone. All the way through Jesus saying that whenever you visit anybody in the hospital or anybody in jail or anybody who's feeding anybody who's hungry, then you have done it to me. I mean, over and over again, he encourages us to love and be out in public, and be social creatures and not hide away and be monks, so to speak. But I mean, even when Paul traveled, and here's another thing though about going out, you know, you don't need to be isolated in public. And I think Larry even spoke a little bit to this, and so did La-Di-Da. You can hide in public just as well as you can fellowship there. And I think that, you know, when Jesus sent out, he sent them out two by two. And when Paul went, he never went by himself. And I think that there's this sense that we're to be blessed with fellowship even when we're serving the Lord and even when we're called to go someplace. It scares me to death when missionaries go places by themselves because I think there's a lot of danger there. Jesus said himself, wherever there is two of us gathered in my name, I will be there with you. And is those kind of blessings and promises that I think we need to hold to and that we need to really just cling to in our lives in this world where it's everything all the time, and it's and you're never even alone because you got your cell phone with you, and you know, we need to take time to meditate. I agree with those aspects as well, but I think it's important that we don't isolate ourselves from our brothers and sisters in the Lord. Anybody else have anything that just got to be said? Okay, you may have anything else to say that didn't have to be said. All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. You've been great. This has been one of the best shows ever.
There's only one more thing to add. As deep or as complicated as these conversations can get, I would like to remind everyone that the Christian life is as simple as a relationship with the Lord. Love the Lord with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. We Grace Junkies may disagree on individual points, but we love each other. And we hope that you have a relationship with the Lord because He loves you. Thank you for joining us.